Good evening, everybody. It's the 13th of November, 2024, and we just finished our song quiz, and we're going to have a guest vocalist for the song quiz on Friday night. Guest vocalist. That's right, it's a resurrected Freddie Mercury, freshly back from the dentist. So, good evening, good evening. So, let's get into it straight up. I mean, Bitcoin cooking right now, $126,375.55, which is not bad, which is not too bad, not too shabby. And what do we got here? 5 days? What's it been doing for 5 days? Well, quite a lot. Quite a lot. Yeah, from 105, so it's gone up 21,000. Just look at a month ago, it was kicking at 86,000, so it's gone up $40,000 in a month. Hey, we've only just begun to pump. All right, so that's really, really great. All right, let's get your questions and comments. Yeah, that just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times. Welcome to the final show. I hope you're wearing your best clothes. You can't bribe your door on the way to the sky. You look pretty good down here, but you ain't really good. It's a really, really great song by Harry. Well, he sings it, and it's a really great song. I was thinking of doing a whole show just on those lyrics, which are really quite powerful and Christian. All right. Good to see you guys, too. Thank you for dropping by. And Bitcoin seems to, it got strapped to a rocket straight to the moon. Oh, the moon? The moon? It's heading out of the galaxy, baby! All right. Somebody writes, hello, Steph. Oh, yeah, this is from last week. Sorry. Hello, Steph. I got into a debate on X the other day about taxation being theft. The talking point, the other person brought up a talking point I've never heard before. Property is theft. Contributed to the philosopher Pierre-Joseph Proudhon. Proudhon. I'm currently reading up on this, but I'm curious of your thoughts on the claim that property is theft and how you would argue against it. Thank you for your time. It's a great, great question. And property is theft is a deepity. It is a deepity. What that means is that property is theft is something that just sounds clever because it's mildly contradictory, but doesn't actually mean anything. So the idea that property is theft does not come out of the Industrial Revolution. Pierre Proudhon was talking about the aristocracy. I can say this, having come from aristocracy myself. My father's entire mission in life was to rescue the family name from infamy. Boy, it's a good thing I've done everything I can to please my father. He was like, we have to resurrect our name. We have to resurrect our good name. Because his father, I think it was his father, was a notorious drunk who sold off huge tracts of land for the sake of his indulgences, and there was just enough money left over to send the 4 kids, 3 girls and a boy, to university and so on. So we fell from grace. My ancestors were nobility in England and Ireland. The name Molyneux, of course, comes from the Norman. It comes from the Norman conquests. It comes from France. We came over with William the Conqueror in 1066. And you know, I got to tell you, if you're going to follow a leader, you want him to be called the Conqueror. Harry, the excellent wingman, will be accompanying me to the bar tonight. So we were prominent intellectually. We were intellectual leaders. My ancestor, William Molyneux, who I've done a whole show on before, was best friends with John Locke, and they hid from the king in the backyards and barns of Ireland together when they were hunted for all of this. So, yeah, we've had a very illustrious history. There's, in fact, a Molyneux Society. There's a newsletter. I've got the family tree saved here. I've got a coat of arms. I've got a family motto. And it all coalesced. You know, apparently resurrecting the honor of the family name just fell to little old me. And, the only way to have honor in the family name is to have extreme dishonor in the present. The only way to morally move forward is to be called evil in the present. It's just the way that it is. It's the deal, right? If you're in a glider, if you want to get some height, you got to dip first, right? So the only way to be true, to be viewed as truly virtuous in the present is to be called irredeemably, sorry, the only way to be viewed as truly virtuous and honestly virtuous in the future is to be willing to accept the label of evil in the present. So everybody knows this. A few people want to pay the price. I'm happy to. So property is theft. Where did this come from? It came from the fact that how was property allocated in the past? How was property allocated in the past? Well, a bunch of people willing to use extreme levels of violence would come along and take your land. And maybe you'd be some small farmer in the middle of nowhere. Some asshole would come along, enslave you, turn you into his serf or slave, or kill you, rape your women, you know, spread his seed buckshot style like Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan. You know, all of Asia would be different if he'd just been named Genghis Khan. But that's a topic for another time, which will be never. So property is theft. Yeah. So how did landowners, how did the aristocracy get their property? Was it through the operations of the free market? In general, it was not. They got their property, they owned their property by being the most efficient gangsters with a pennant and murderers with a flag known to man, God, and devil. So property is theft, sure. Sure. This is like the Marxism stuff thinks it's like it has validity because when you look back, of course, in history and you say, well, so why were my ancestors aristocrats in Ireland? Well, because we had efficiently served the king as murder warlords. I mean, let's be frank. That's the way it plays. That's the way it goes. That's the way. We fight it. So we were good at threatening people and killing people. Now, you could say, well, we did do a little bit of philosophy and we did a little bit of law and we did, you know, there's some pretty prominent and intellectually powerful people in my lineage in the Brahmin class of the bark trotters of old. But, you know, we were good at fighting, good at killing, and we retained our lands through force, right? So property is theft. Is the Marxist kind of looking backward and saying, you know, there's that great, there's a lovely little bit of filth down here. There's that lovely Monty Python bit in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where they talk about, you know, we're sort of an autonomous collective. We take it turns to act as sort of ratifying officers once a week, and you know, collective, and it's like the Lady of the Lake or strange women hanging about in bogs distributing swords is not a valid basis for the establishment of a government. I mean, if I said I was a king because some moistened bint lobbed a sword at me, they'd throw me away. So it's really, really clever stuff, of course, right? But you know, they work the land. Well, where's your lord? We don't have a lord. So he comes along and he wants to take them over, and he does it by threatening with them or putting a number of them to the sword. And that's the property. So Marxism, unfortunately, has a sense of validity to it because that's how land was conquered in the past. But capitalism is a whole new animal where you create value, right? You can't go and create land, but you can go and create land. But land is one thing they're not making more of, right? So property is theft, yeah. Land ownership was based upon violence. It was not based upon productivity. And then what Marx did was he took the death cult, murder fest, win-lose situation of historical land grabs and turned it to capital, which is a whole different animal and just doesn't work at all. It doesn't work at all. So yeah, property was theft. For sure. For sure. I mean, the idea that you would apply this to capitalists is crazy, right? It's crazy. It's just wrong. I mean, if you look at how the indigenous population dealt with land in the North American continent, it was just, you know, rape, slaughter, murder, genocides. It was just horrible. And so, yeah, it's all theft, it's all violence. Then capitalism comes along. And for once, For once, for the first time in human history, you can get rich without violating the non-aggression principle, right? For once, you can start to get rich without putting peasants to the sword. First time in human history, you could become wealthy without murdering people or threatening to. Amazing. Amazing. And what do people call it? The worst system of exploitation that has ever existed. Oh, this just fundamentally confused people, right? Marxism is the opiate of the intellectuals. Marxism is prejudice for the hyper-emotional, just so you know, because it feels true. Someone's rich. Well, he must have taken from someone, right? So when you're a kid, right, and Marxism is an appeal to the younger sibling paranoia of not getting enough, right? So when you're a kid, let's say you got, I don't know, three older brothers and a cake is put out. Well, they just grab whatever they can and you're left with scraps. And they have more because you have less. And the only way you can get more is by them having less. It's literally food and a cake that is fixed. So the child's view of resource allocation is there's a pie. There's literally an actual literal pie. And if other kids get more, you get less. Right? Which is why when you're a parent, right, if you have multiple siblings and something has to be cut up, right, let's say a piece of pie has to be cut in half, you say to the kid, you cut it, and then the other person chooses which size they want, right? So it is just emotionally immature, incontinent, reactive people who just say, oh, there's a fixed pie, just like when I was a kid. Just like I was a kid. If my brother and I, oh my God, I can't believe it's funny, right? So my brother and I, we used to have this thing called the pusher. I remember this stuff so vividly. One day I'll write about my whole childhood. It's like incredibly impressed upon my head. So we had this thing called the pusher. Now the pusher was, I don't know, it looked like a little bit like if you think of a sort of razor, like a man's razor, but it was used for pushing food onto your fork. And it was cool, man, way better than the knife. And we had to sort of rigidly figure, like we had an egg timer. Okay, we both have to eat our scrambled eggs and toast. We both want the pusher. There's only one pusher. Ding, right? We literally used egg timers to figure out who got more. When we went up to, I think it was Bree in Scotland, at one point we were going to go to Scotland, not to Canada. I did all of these entrance exams for schools in Scotland. And we went up there to check out the lay of the land. And we stayed in a B&B in a place called Bree. I know that sounds like a D&D thing, but if I remember rightly, it was a place called Bree in Scotland. And we wanted to sign the guest book. And my brother and I, now, obviously, I think that I wasn't quite this bad, but he was really bad this way. So I just descended to his level. He'd probably say the same thing. And I don't even know who's right at this point in my life. So long ago, right? But we wanted to sign the guest book, and maybe it's still somewhere up there in Bree, like more than half a century later, give or take. But we signed the guest book, and we both had to, he wrote super, and I wrote duper. Now, I wanted the first word, but I was okay to have the last word. So he wrote super, and I wrote duper, and that was fair. Why? Because it was the same number of letters, you know? Oh, my God. Oh, it was not a healthy family, family dynamic or a situation. And I remember up there, we had all of these cool places to go. But what my brother and I loved doing the most was there was this long pier. When it was low tide, there was all of this sand. And it was like a 10-foot drop off the edge of the pier into this deep sand when the tide was out. And what we spent hours and hours and hours sprinting until our lungs burned, launching ourselves into the air, and then landing in the soft sand, 10 to 15 foot down and away from the pier. Oh, absolutely glorious time. I think about that now in my late 50s, and I'm like, but my knees would hurt. I shouldn't get a hernia. But that was glorious. Glorious. So, yeah, there it is. There it is. There it is. So, yeah, and Marxism just appeals to younger sibling paranoia about fixed resources and win-lose stuff, right? I never really heard you talk about your brother. I always thought you were a single child. Were you close to him? No, I'm afraid we were, unfortunately, natural enemies from day one. Bray is in the Shetland Islands. Weather is chaos up there. Yeah, I haven't seen my brother in like a quarter century. I have nothing to do with him. We were in business together, but that's a good way to find out people's true nature now, isn't it? So, all right. But, you know, it's not his fault that I'm notorious, so I don't really talk about him much. Okay, let's see here. Oh, I forgot to check over on Rumby Rumble. Gonna tell you about my baby. You know she comes around. She's about 5'4", from her head to the ground. Is there a Bree Scotland? Or have I just forgotten? I know I did spend a tragic amount of time up in the Outer Hebrides. Bray. Bray? Is that in Scotland? No, Shetland. Yeah, you're right. Why should... tiny Scottish... Bray, Scotland. I don't think we went out to the Shetlands. Did we? Yeah, maybe we did. Maybe we did. But yeah, I did a whole two-week tour with the Young Explorers of England. I did a whole two-week tour with a lunatic writer in the Outer Hebrides, where we were supposed to do all this camping, but we ended up sleeping in barns. I remember we would sleep in barns because the weather was so terrible, and we also slept with our faces pressed up against the dingy, grimy, dirty glass of bus shelters, and God, it was absolutely a horrible trip. Absolutely. Anyway, I've talked about it before, and it was one of these things where I was supposed to write up this big report, and I dodged that for like a year afterwards, because the last thing I wanted to do was write about that ghastly experience. Just ghastly. All right. I have a topic. I have a topic, which I'm happy to talk about, but I'm also happy to take your questions and comments. Let's make it a conversation. Yeah, we went over 130 today, right? Didn't we? 130. Yeah, we went a little over 130, all-time high. 133.53. And the buoyancy is just there, and it's only going to continue from here, in my view. In my humble opinion, not advice. I'm not an expert. Do your own research. But BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF has hit $40 billion in AUM, faster than any other ETF in history. Yes, yes, yes. Public companies must buy Bitcoin to prevent their stock from being sold in preference for Bitcoin. CFOs and treasurers are figuring this out. That's from Parker A. Lewis. That is really, really something. Ole Lehmann said, I'm German. 16 years ago, the EU and the US economies were neck and neck. Today, the US economy is 50% larger than the entire EU combined. That is just wild. That is just wild. US GDP, 25.5 trillion. EU GDP, 16.6 trillion. But in 2008, they were nearly equal. Europe chose security over growth. America chose innovation over regulation. You know, one of the most powerful phrases to understand the free market and its value and its power is creative destruction. Creative destruction. That in order for new things to be born, old things have to be threatened. So this is, you have to celebrate the creative destruction of new things, right? Rotary phones have to die so that touch phones can live, right? So, it's really, really tragic. Thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate your tippy tip. freedomain.com/donate if you'd like to help a show out there. China has surpassed both. Oh, is that right? I mean, of course, you know, there's certainly real validity in that. But China, somebody says, I'm a half coiner. Wish I'd gotten on sooner, but I'd have none if not for you, Steph. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad that you got in. But China, of course, has a lot of these ghost cities, right? So a lot of it is sort of made up. All right, let me see what else I have to talk of. Oh, yeah, somebody wrote this. There's this great meme. 21 million Bitcoin, over 4 billion women. Cross out all the zeros, 21 to 4,036. You can get a girlfriend later. And it's interesting because it's interesting to me because do you want a girlfriend if you're going to become wealthy? Do you want a girlfriend? Like, what kind of girlfriend are you going to get before or after becoming wealthy, right? Interesting question. This topic, oh my gosh, it's not politics, I guarantee you. Alex Cole was like, when the Department of Education is eliminated, what happens to the special needs children? Just curious. Oh, it's so passive aggressive. Just curious. It's so, I don't know this guy from Adam, but I'm not talking about him in particular, but just this, look, it's got the Department of Education. It's called the Department of Education. If we get rid of the Department of Education, we're getting rid of education. I'm going to do a whole show probably next week on how to tell someone's an idiot. I mean, if you eliminate the Department of Education, no one's going to be educated because it's right there in the name. It's right there in the name. But this is the kind of people who they're just subject to propaganda, right? I mean, it's the Affordable Care Act. Clearly, it's meant to make healthcare affordable. You know, this is why they say abortion is women's reproductive health care. And it's like, no, that's fetus killing. So the idea that if a department doesn't do it, it won't get done. But Patriot Act, right. I mean, it is. But remember, half of Americans read at a sixth grade level or below. So they're attached to labels, right? Like Plato's, I mean, if you haven't seen my four-hour presentation on the nature of Plato and the thoughts of Plato, you really should. It's a great one. Or, of course, if you go to hoaxedmovie.com, you can see me talk about Plato's cave in a very powerful way. It even gave me goosebumps and I did it. And so, yeah, hoaxedmovie.com has Mike Cernovich production. It was really good. So these are people just looking at, they're not looking at things themselves. They're not looking at things in the world. They're looking at shadows cast by shapes put in front of fires. They're just, there's nothing real about it, right? There's nothing real about it. They're dreamers. Yeah, dreamers. Dreamers. All right. So, yeah, I mean, you can't even talk to people who are, you can't even talk to people who are trapped in language, right? It's welfare. Don't you want people to farewell? Well, I guess with the dreamers, some people do want them to farewell. Wiedersehen, good night. Yes, yes, yes. Just fascinating. So. What can you say? Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Bitcoin is at 90,000. This is from Crypto T, Cleavage Crypto T. She wrote, Bitcoin is at 90,000 with only 0.5% of the world using it. Well, the fascinating thing about Bitcoin is, as I talked about yesterday, one in two coins hasn't moved in a year, and two in three coins haven't moved in 2 years. So they're not using it. They're hoarding it. And hoarding it is what drives up the value in particular. So, Albert Einstein, what an asshole. What an absolute shaggy-haired, messy, desked, cousin-marrying clusterfuck of an a-hole. I mean, not only did he basically fellate Vladimir Lenin, mass murderer, of Christians and kulaks, but he also wrote a book called Why Socialism? And he wrote he wrote. Private capital tends to be concentrated in few hands, partly because of competition among the capitalists and partly because technological development and the increasing division of labor encourage the formation of larger units of production at the expense of smaller ones. The result of these developments is an oligarchy of private capital, the enormous power of which cannot be effectively checked, even by a democratically organized political society. Yeah, so, I mean, tiny question. Do you feel more concerned if you get a letter from Berkshire Hathaway inviting you to invest, or if you get a letter from a tax collector saying you owe them $1 zillion? You know, just out of curiosity, right? Tony Bennett, what, was in the 80s? He owed like $2 million and was playing unticketed corners of the Ontario Place Amphitheater in Toronto. So, the idea that there's a really big plant that fabricates computer chips and that is somehow massively dangerous to you, or, you know, on the other hand, there's a fucking government that can draft you and get your face blown off by drones around the world. Yeah. The fact that there's a big plant that costs $10 billion that fabricates computer chips that I need to play Doom 20 billion faster. Ah, that's a huge threat to me. So what we need is not a concentration of capital based upon the voluntary choice of investors and consumers. What we need is centralized monopoly on universal violence. That's the ticket. Yeah, that's it. Because I'm really, really concerned about concentration of power. So let's give a monopoly on, a violent monopoly on things like education, interest rates, money printing, money creation, bank licensing, war, laws, taxes, voluntary, violent monopolies. That's going to keep you safe from the aggregation of capital in the hands of private owners as a result of voluntary choices in the free market. If you don't like the $10 billion computer chip plant, don't buy from them. If you don't like capitalists having too much money, don't buy their shit, organize boycotts, don't invest in their stocks. It's really not so fucking complicated. Oh no, people like this band. Oh no, they have a monopoly on music. We have to chop them up into tiny bits with the power of the state. We have to Fargo-style woodchipper them because otherwise there's too much aggregation of capital in the hands of these musicians. Oh no, Megan Thee Stallion is paid $5 million to shake her ass for Kamala. Which is interesting because Kamala also shook her ass for Kamala, according to Willie Brown. So, it's just wild. So, he goes on to write, this is true, right? This you can't control these voluntary free market capitalists with the violent power of the state. Why? He says, this is true since the members of legislative bodies are selected by political parties, largely financed or otherwise influenced by private capitalists who, for all practical purposes, separate the electorate from the legislature. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny that if you have a bunch of rabid giant fucking wolves that keep ripping apart your livestock, which you in fact need to survive, you'll build some fucking fences. If you're threatened by predators, you try to either domesticate the predators, you try to keep them away, you build fences, right? So you will act to protect yourself from predators. Now, the government is largely a predator, so yes, in fact, capitalists tend to try and get involved with the government. It's not really what they want to do because they'd rather be out there building shit. But if they don't get control of the government, other capitalists get control of the government, so it's just everybody grabbing for the control of the political weaponry so that they can wield it against their enemies rather than having wield it against them. It's a win-lose net loss. It's a lose-lose in the long run, but in the short run, of course, if the government has the power to regulate capitalists, capitalists will try to influence government. Sure. Of course. Inevitable. Absolutely inevitable. So, but that the problem is power. The problem is political power. The problem is not, you know, like all the leftists who are like completely freaking out over Donald Trump's victory, right? Or the Republicans, really Donald Trump's decisive victory. There was no victory without Donald Trump. but all of the people who are completely freaking out about this shit don't seem to at all think or reason or wonder and say, holy shit, if my entire happiness or sadness depends on the result of one election, maybe, just maybe, the government has a bit too much fucking power. You know, it's just a thought. If your entire reproductive life hinges on whether Donald Trump or Kamala Harris gets into power, maybe, just maybe, the government has a little bit too much fucking power. But of course, they won't think that. Oh no! The power I was hoping to wield against my enemies could be wielded against my friends! Yeah, Elon said he'd rather be building rockets, but yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, look what happened to Peanut the Squirrel for not having a license. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Hey, Steph, just wanted to say I love all you do. I intend to donate Bitcoin for Christmas. I very much appreciate that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, Labour in the UK say people are forced to work zero-hour contracts, then say the wealthy are being asked to contribute more in tax. Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so people regretfully get involved in politics for the most part. I mean, what radicalized Bill Gates, who I'm, of course, no huge fan of as a whole, but what radicalized Bill Gates was the DOJ going after him for daring to bundle Internet Explorer into Windows back in the 90s. He was like, well, fuck business then. I'm going to do politics because that's where the real power is. So Einstein also said, the consequence of like those dastardly capitalists attempting to control the violence that's used against them. How dare they resist? How dare they attempt to control the violence that we want to use against them? My God, how appalling. How dare the woman resist, right? So he says the consequence is that the representatives of the people do not, in fact, sufficiently protect the interests of the underprivileged sections of the population. Moreover, under existing conditions, private capitalists inevitably control, directly or indirectly, the main source of information, press, radio, education. Right. Why do they do that? Why do they do that? Because if they don't, their enemies will do it. Right. So capitalists have to control the press, because otherwise the press gets controlled by socialists who urge the masses to rise up and kill all the capitalists. Right? It's not that complicated. It's literally not that complicated. That's my daughter's new phrase. It's not that serious, and it's literally not that complicated, right? So, yeah, I mean, this is... Now, why is it this sort of underprivileged thing and this helpless thing and these, you know, they're just... They have no... The workers have no negotiating power. And they have no influence. They just are helpless, storm-tossed ookie cookies of the capitalist circle jerk. I mean, it's just terrible, right? Oh, Elon wants to buy MSNBC? Yeah, well, who knows, right? But the press is run by communists. How did that happen? Well, because the communists want to control the state, right? So, but for a while, they weren't, right? For a while, they weren't. For a long time, so... I don't know how you fight voluntary concentration with coercive monopoly. You know, the most attractive guys will often sleep with more women than the least attractive guys, so we need, according to this logic, institutionalized forced marriages for everyone. Oh my gosh, it's just so retarded. It's just so retarded. Somebody says, it's ironic that Albert Einstein had a fallout with his friend Fritz Haber because he invented mustard gas. Einstein berated him for such a devastating weapon, only for him to create nukes. No, Einstein didn't create the nukes. I mean, it was the Manhattan Project and all of that, right? Did you know that when the bomb went off over Japan in the movie Oppenheimer, apparently, I think it's true, I can understand why it would be true, in South Korea they cheered. South Korea suffered a lot under the Japanese, right? As did the Chinese, of course, right? What was the deal with taxes in the UK where the Rolling Stones were tax exiles and had to move to France in the early 70s? Well, I mean, the tax rate in England for the top earners was 95%. There's one for you, 19 for me. Hey, it's the tax man, right? The Beatles wrote a whole song about that called The Tax Man. And Bono, Mr. Asshole, colored peepers socialist guy, was all for socialism, and then moved his assets out of the UK to be able to pay lower taxes. So noble. It's hard for me to remember a time when the leftists didn't control the media, maybe like the mid-90s. Or 2006 to 2016. Did you think that the leftists controlled me? Sorry, I'm losing my... Yeah, so people just had to flee. And they were only allowed to spend a certain amount of time in England. They had to spend time overseas. And there were just basically a lot of music bands roamed around the world as tax exiles and so on, right? Which, I mean, I'm not blaming them for that. It's like, okay, but then don't be fucking socialists. All right. What's your belief on reversing cultural degradation without society collapsing in order to trigger it? Well, that's Bitcoin, right? I talked about a way to solve the national debt crisis for donors. You can get it. It's in a show I did yesterday. Adam Kokesh is not a leftist. I don't think Adam Kokesh is a leftist, right? I think bro with the big dogs of the abs is a voluntarist. If I remember rightly, it's been a while. I fought the law and the law won. Exile on Main Street. Yeah, it was the album they did in France. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, cultural degradation. So we want to move human assets from fiat to Bitcoin because that reverses cultural degradation. A lot of those girls going on a sex strike over Trump look like they would be better off on a hunger strike. Well, they're choosing to close their legs and be celibate, which solves the problem of abortion, STDs, and extensive high body count premarital sex. So, to own the mid right, they become the far right. It's funny. I looked for the private portion of your Bitcoin talk and could not find it. Was that live only? I don't think so. James, didn't we put that out as a video? But it certainly was live. I did upload the video. I'm sure that James got it out or will get it out. Actually, let me just check. Let me just check. Oh, I just closed that tab too. Let me just check. That's one for you, 19 for me. Hey, it's the tax man. All right, my library. What do we got here? Brum-bum, brum-bum, brum-bum-bum-bum-bum. Ah, yes. Here we go. I'll give you the video. Sure, why not? Here is the video. Happy Wednesday, Steph. Thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. There's your video. It's unfortunate the artists and celebrities get such a big microphone. They aren't political philosophers yet have a lot of influence. Right. Well, artists are incredibly susceptible to propaganda. And because they're incredibly susceptible to propaganda, propaganda focuses on them because they are a way to amplify ideas and arguments, right? Bono writes pro-refugee songs, yet bought the neighbor's house for privacy. Love him as an artist, but... Yeah, well, you know, as I said, the pro-refugee stuff is a lot of time... it's a status signal, right? I don't have to live in the neighborhoods where these things are affected. And of course, you remember, what was it last year that 40 migrants were dropped off at Martha's Vineyard and they got them out of there and locked in an army base within like 40 hours or 48 hours of it happening, right? All right. Donations, of course, gratefully and humbly accepted. And don't forget, of course, that I'm still doing, I'm not sure if it's super long, but I'm still doing private call-ins. If you want to do private call-ins, something that you want to talk about, that you want to keep off the radar, you want to keep out of the public sphere, just you and I one-on-one, I'm happy to do that. You can go to freedomain.com/call. Then we can do that. I'm not sure I'm going to be doing it forever and ever, amen, because I do miss having stuff that can be released to the general public, but I'll do it for a little longer, because I have some people queued up already, so. Let's see here, freedomain.com/call. Have you decided if you're going to devote more content to current politics? Yeah, I may do second hour of a Sunday show for donors. I may do that. Don't forget, fdrurl.com/TikTok to sign up for a TikTok and join us there as well. I would appreciate that. So yeah, I could do that. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. Every now and then I'll go and check on X. Everyone's still in the, so there was a very funny documentary, still is, I guess, very funny, by Rob Reiner. I know he was a good artist, is a terrible person, but called Spinal Tap, which was about a fictional heavy metal band. And it, the absolutely hilarious stuff. Absolutely hilarious stuff. Like deeply, deeply, shockingly, browbeatingly funny. And at one point, they're in a hotel and their career is in the skids. And they're headlined at this event. It's like Bob's Puppet Show and Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap is the name of the band. And their trash manager is like, ah, I can't believe it. I've told them once, I've told them 1,000 times. It should be Spinal Tap and Bob's Puppet Show, not you below. Anyway, so one of their songs, old songs, Listen to What the Flower People Say. One of their songs is played on the radio. And they're like, oh, there's an oldie bitty goodie. And the DJ is like, ah, that's Spinal Tap, currently residing in the Where Are They Now file. And so every now and then I'll check on X to see if I'm around. And, you know, every now, there's just an old potato cam video of me debating about immigration for 2 minutes. And Steph, currently residing in the Where Is He Now file. He's gone. I just despawned for people. So. All right. Let me just get to your. Forgive me, Steph, for I have sinned. I signed up for Facebook to use the marketplace. My broken truck wasn't going to sell itself. Fine. Totally fine. Totally fine. Thank you, local son. I appreciate the warmth and vitamin D you provide me. I still have a Facebook account. Yeah, I've just disappeared, man. I've just disappeared from most people, which is fine. Invisibility in the present is the only way to be visible for the future. Prominence in the present is invisibility to the future. 500-year, I'm like a Chinese emperor. I get the 500-year business plan. 500-year business plan. All right. Questions, comments, or I can dip into my topic, which is kind of emotional. It's going to be kind of emotional. Just so you know. Not for me, because I'm cold-blooded. Check it and see. How many people that you knew before the age of 30 do you still talk to? Ew, look, dimples. So, what is your guys' guesses? How many people that I knew before the age of 30 do I still talk to? What's your guys' guesses? Steph has a way to cut through the BS and get to the core of an argument and explain it in such a simple, powerful way. Truly amazing. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. 4. We got a 4. 0, 0, 4, 0, 5. Coked up auctioneer is my alter ego. We got a 4, 0, 5, 2, 0, 0, 2. Niner, breaker. Big trouble in Little China. I loved that movie when I was younger, man. The elevator scene always killed me. How many people do you know before the age of 30 are still alive? Bro, I'm only 58. Yeah, it's zero. I don't talk to anyone. Occasionally I have this urge to just get a regrouping of our old D&D crew just to see how everyone's life turned out and all of that. But I've never quite gotten around to it. I'm still getting over your question about how many quality people you meet in life. Oh boy. Yeah, it's good to know. Like, if you, I don't know, let's say you're a zillionaire and you're looking for a place to live, then you're not going to just look at everything. You're going to look at the high-end properties. You're going to whatever, right? So you got to know how few houses are going to meet your criteria, right? So it's the same thing with relationships, right? How many people are going to meet reasonably high standards of quality and integrity? I mean, I have great friendships now, for sure, but I think most of my friends I've met through the show. I mean, I think most, if not all of my current friends I've met through the show. And it's nice. It's just nice. I don't like to think of us as like-minded. I just like to think of us as minded. Minded. And of course, I don't want my daughter to be hanging around with kids who aren't peacefully parented, right? So. Do you ever look people up from your past on social media? Maybe once every couple of years. The funny thing is, if I have a dream about someone, right, I still have dreams about people from my past because they're somewhat analogies for things that go on in the present and often warnings of things maybe I need to, right? Oh, the oldest friendship I have? 17 years? 17 years? We work together. You may know him as Jimmy James. But yeah, we've been friends. 16 years, 17 years, 15 years, something like that. And of course, there were a bunch of people who were around early on in the show, and they got scattered, I think, through media attacks and so on, and they had to run for cover and all of that. So, yeah, very, very exciting stuff. All right, let me just see if anybody else. How insightful do you find your own dream, Steph? Oh, pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. I should spend more time analyzing my own dreams, but I usually know kind of what they're about and have it guided that way. So, I mean, I've analyzed so many dreams of mine that I kind of know what the shorthand is these days. I will thank Izzy for that. Yes, you should listen to the show that I did with Izzy, which has some pretty mind-blowing stuff in it. And I will definitely, I mean, make a note of that. And let me be sure I remember to do that. So that's good. I dreamed that I was crying in the bath and then shot myself on the wall that said my company's name. Should I quit? Dunno. Company's name in blood? That's interesting. I dreamed I was crying in the bath and then shot myself. So my guess is that you are being exploited by your company because you are afraid of disapproval. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you can call in. We just released today a call-in show about a dream. I love those. They are so challenging. They make my brain light up in weird, awkward Pilates with a cast kind of way. And so I really do find the dream analyses extremely challenging because I don't know the context and I just have a bunch of images and I have to find a way to stitch them together in a way that's meaningful and important for the listener. So I find the dream analyses stretch me probably more than just about anything else in particular. And I'm scared to hand in my notice. Oh, I got it right. Yeah. Yeah. This is why those in authority don't protect children, because unprotected children are simple as shit to exploit when they grow up. They're so easy to exploit when they grow up. And so, yeah, they don't want to interfere with that, right? Gotta head out. Have a good night's sleep. Okay. I take commands. All right. I think we'll do... Should we do my topic? It's all about you guys. I'm going to do my topic. I need my topic. But if there's anything else that's yearning, burning for you, my topic shouldn't be more than 15, 20 minutes, but it seems pretty important. I think it's pretty important. It's so sad thinking about all the money that people lost by not following me after I was deplatformed, right? Isn't that just tragic? Isn't that just tragic? Just tragic. So Bitcoin's gone up 10 times since I was deplatformed. It's gone up tenfold since I was deplatformed. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that seems like very costly. But, you know, virtue is its own reward, especially when it's denominated in Bitcoin. All right, let me just see. I want to make sure. Okay, so, yeah, I'll talk about this. So, in a bunch, I'm not telling any tales out of school, but this has come out of a bunch of private calls. Now, of course, I'm not in a zillion years going to talk about any specific content with regards to the private calls, but I think general themes are fine. And this is not just private calls, but it really sort of synthesized things that have been sort of themes in the call-in shows for a long time. So hit me with a why. If you were mistreated as a child, abused or neglected as a child, and you find yourself sometimes or often paralyzed with excessive empathy for your abusers, i.e., yes, my mother hit me, but she had a really bad childhood. Context, perspective, quote, maturity, understanding, reaching across the aisle, perhaps premature forgiveness, but you have pain, anger, sorrow, frustration, maybe even anger and rage, and then you block it, you stop it with empathy for those who hurt you. I mean, my example, which you probably heard before, is yes, my mother was extremely violent and dangerous, but she grew up in the war. She was born in 1937 in Berlin. It was not a fun time for her as a kid, right? So she would have been, what, 8 or so? Yeah, she would have been recently turned 8 when the war ended. And it wasn't like the end of the war was the end of sorrows in Germany. My God, right? So what do I do, or what did I do, with my anger towards my mother, given that she had probably one of the worst childhoods around, right? Is it unfair or and I don't mean to make this about me, but because I don't know your individual stories, right? What do you do when you figure out that you were hurt by people who were hurt, by people who were hurt, by people who were hurt? Repeat, never fade, only escalate to the beginning of time. What do you do when you realize that people caused you pain, who themselves were caused pain, who themselves were caused pain, back and back and back to the generations? That is a tough question. It's not an easy question until tonight. And we will make it easy. My mom says someone used postpartum as an excuse. My dad uses how his father treated him as an excuse. Right. Right. I think most people struggle with this. And you should struggle with it. You should struggle with it. Because it is an enormous challenge. It is an enormous challenge. I would like to say do the opposite. I don't know what that means. You have sympathy and break the cycle? Well, if we could see the history of the, quote, hysterical leftists, right, on social media, if we could see their history, if we knew about their childhoods, right, if we knew about their childhoods, would we have sympathy? If they knew how bad it feels, their assholes are inflicting it on you. Listen, I absolutely understand where you're coming from. But if they hadn't been mistreated, they wouldn't have mistreated you. Right? My daughter is only 2 generations from my mother. Like, you gotta understand how weird this is. My daughter, I mean, you could argue 1 generation removed through me, but let's just say 2. Let's not stretch the case, right? My daughter is 2 generations from my mother. My daughter and my mother have both been alive in the same universe for almost 16 years. My daughter and my mother couldn't be more different. Could they be more, like, they couldn't be more different. Almost opposites. So you understand, I'm poised between the deep past and the distant future. It's a very dizzying place to straddle. It's insane to straddle. It's like those videos you see of, you know, 1 foot on the pier, 1 foot on the boat drifts out. And I am seeing, as a father and a son, the 2 most extreme female personalities that I can conceive of. Not that my daughter's extreme, but she's extremely different, right? My daughter is effortlessly hilarious. Well, you can hear that when she imitates me. My mother's humor was always strained and self-conscious. My daughter is very peaceful. My mother was very violent. My daughter is poised and affectionate. My mother was hysterical and clingy. My daughter doesn't take herself too seriously, but takes values very seriously. My mother took herself entirely too seriously and abandoned values completely. I mean, I could go on and on, but it is unbelievably opposing to see these 2 poles, right? These 2, and again, my daughter is not extreme. My daughter is healthy, but she is extremely different from my mother, right? And you understand, my daughter is a quarter my mother. My daughter is a quarter my mother. Occasionally, I'd suspect I wasn't my father's son, but I'm pretty sure my mother's son. Somebody says, I was listening to an interview with Roger Daltrey from The Who, and he felt his parents' generation were essentially shell-shocked and never really got over the war their entire lifetime. Well, and that's in England, right? Germany was erased end-to-end, like, destroyed, shredded, erased, end to end. So when I see, this is the ultimate argument for nurture versus nature. My daughter is a quarter my mother, and they could not be more opposite. I can't think of a single characteristic they share in common. I mean, I think maybe they're both naturally slender, or like maybe it's a couple of physical characteristics, but I cannot think of a single psychological characteristic that they even remotely share in common. They are as opposite can be. Jeez, I thought I wasn't going to be emotional, but I am. Is my daughter who my mother could have been without that godforsaken satanic war that wrecked and destroyed the remnants of European civilization. Is my daughter the woman my mother could have been if the banksters didn't want their endless wars? Has Izzy ever met your mother, or will she in the future? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. In no way, shape, or form. My wife's never met her. My friends have never met her. My daughter will never meet her. No, in no way, shape, or form. I would not inflict that on my daughter. I'm proud of you for making that happen. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You guys have been part of that, right? The donations have allowed me to. Is nurture stronger than nature? Well, of course. Of course. I mean, wouldn't it have been an unbelievable thing, or a shocking thing, or a terrible thing, if my daughter had turned into my mother, despite having been raised completely opposite? Right? Wouldn't that have been wild, right? Must feel strange to be proud of a child for not turning out like their grandparents. I'm not proud of Izzy in that sense, because I think she basically had every advantage. I mean, her mother practiced psychology and was an expert in early childhood development. I'm a peaceful parent philosophy guy, and I have massive experience with kids from working in a daycare for many years. So she had a lot of strong advantages. I mean, there's things I'm proud of her about, but I can't just be proud of her for not turning out like her mother. Like my mother, sorry. I mean, obviously, I take a certain amount of pride and contentment in having really broken the cycle of violence and tragedy and abuse. But looking at my daughter, I think, of course, you know, it's a mind-bending or mind-twisty kind of place to go, but I think about what my mother would have been like if I had raised her. And to a small degree, I have that, right? Because I see this, right? And it's not mourning what I didn't have. It's actually mourning what my mother didn't have, or everything that my mother did have, which was, all you have to do is look up what the Russians, I mean, outside of just the war, Look at what the Russian soldiers did to the females from 8 to 80, or wider, right? In Germany, when they invaded. And I'm sure the Allies had their psychos and pedophiles as well. So, my mother had an absolutely terrible, appalling, wretched, horrible childhood of the kind of exploitation and destruction that I cannot conceive of, really. And it's never really been dramatized. You can't make a movie talking about how brutal it was for the Germans after the war, or during and after the war. You can't do that, right? Because they just need to be demonized. Although my mother was certainly a victim, she was just a little kid. So that's the challenge, right? my anger towards and in the past fear of my mother and her violence was my original experience before I had any clue about her history. So I don't want to belabor the point, just hit me with the why to bookmark that this makes sense, right? I don't want to over-explain. You're obviously a brilliant crew and crowd, so. But having raised my daughter, and she's, you know, she's going to be 16 next month. How would my mother have been if I'd raised her? Or, I mean, obviously someone like me or in some sort of different environment and so on, right? Or did my mother go through so much trauma that she lost her observing ego, she lost the capacity to do anything other than act out, right? So that's the challenge, right? That's the challenge. By the time I met my mother, did she have any free will of any actionable kind? I mean, we'll never know for sure, because there's no experiment you can possibly do to test that. She did not act as if she had any free will. So here's the challenge. This is the contradiction that I think is worth discussing. Can I achieve robust mental health and self-protection without getting angry at the people who abused me? You know, I'll never know what happened to my father in his childhood. But the fact that he married my mother, given what almost certainly happened in her childhood, it probably would have been really bad in my father's childhood. Can I achieve mental health, emotional integration, and protection from evildoers if I don't get angry at the people who abused and neglected me? Because anger says this is unacceptable, I will not allow, it will not repeat. And the activation of anger against injustice is the activation of a form of immune system response, right? Exploitation is like a tumor or an infection or viruses. And you want your immune system to get really angry and intolerant, right? Like, according to what I've read, you know, there are constantly little cancers being formed and they're being destroyed by our immune system. Now, we want our immune system physically to do two things. One, viciously, blindly, relentlessly attack bad shit. That's number one. That's the number one thing we want our immune system to do. Really, really, with extreme prejudice, terminate, destroy, eviscerate, and disassemble cancers, bacteria, viruses, bad shit, right? That's what we want our immune system to do. Now, our immune system, we don't want it to have sympathy for a tumor, especially a cancerous one. Well, you know, but the other cells, they also want to survive and, you know, they're just doing their thing biologically. And no, we don't want any of that. No, fuck that. You know, go in with Stukas, go in with nukes and eradicate that shit, right? No sympathy. No, well, you know, but the COVID virus also wants to live and it wants to reproduce and I shouldn't be too intolerant. You know, we want to live and reproduce, but so like accommodate, like we don't want that, right? Because that's immunodeficiency, right? Then you got to end up living in a bubble. I mean, not the leftist kind, but the immunodeficiency kind, the AIDS kind, right? So we want our immune system to attack that which harms us. And in the same way, we want our anger to keep at bay those who would exploit us. That's the number one thing we want, is for our immune system to attack that which harms us and for our anger to protect us from those who would exploit us. That's number one. The second thing we want our immune system to do after attacking dangerous cells is don't attack healthy cells. Don't attack healthy cells. Because that's very bad too, right? So attack dangerous cells, don't attack healthy cells, right? So, if your immune system attacks healthy cells, that's really bad, and that's like your anger turning to rage and attacking people who care about you, or your children who are bonded with you and care about you and love you, and right? So, my mother's anger did not protect her from exploitation, but she used it to attack her own flesh and blood in the form of her children. My mother was exploited by men fairly continuously over the course of her life, and she was in pursuit of that. So her anger failed to protect her from those who exploited her, but it turned against her own flesh and blood, right? Right? So that is in the analogy, right? So you have immunodeficiency, where your immune system doesn't attack unhealthy things, dangerous things, and then you have autoimmune disorder, where the immune system attacks the body's own healthy tissue. And anger, as the analogy for the immune system, right? If you attack your own family, you got husband and wife screaming at each other, they're screaming at the kids, then that's an autoimmune disorder, and in the analogy, right? Because you're attacking that which you have chosen voluntarily, that you care about, you're attacking that which is healthy, your marriage and your kids, right? And so what we often see, and I've had this countless conversations, you've heard them too, in my call-in shows, is that people scream at their children and bow down before their abusive parents, right? They'll yell at their children, sometimes they'll hit their children, and yet they bow down before and appease and sacrifice their mental health. In order to appease those who've exploited them. So, if our immune system is there to protect us from exploitation, then sympathy for the exploiters, which understandable, which we can understand from an abstract sense, lends us to be susceptible to being further exploited. Because sympathy for people who care about us is really, really healthy. Sympathy for people who exploit us is used to further exploit us. In other words, not attacking the healthy cells is healthy. Not attacking the cancer cells is deadly. So in other words, if your immune system, you want it to have empathy for the healthy cells and not attack them, but you don't want it to have empathy for the cancer cells and not attack them. Hit me with the why. Again, I don't want to over-explain. I don't want to under-explain. It's a challenging idea to get across for me. So hit me with the why if you're with me so far. It doesn't mean you agree with everything, but do you sort of follow the argument? Just to check. This also may take a little bit of while to absorb, because it's quite a wild argument. Makes sense? Makes sense, right? So, I want you to think of a baby zebra. Stripey, the baby zebra, from my upcoming children's book on UPB. Stripey the baby zebra. Now, Stripey the baby zebra is just munching away on the African veldt, and then sniffs lion, or sniffs danger, and sees a female lions, the feminists of the lions, screaming down the hill towards her. So what does Stripey the zebra, what should Stripey the zebra do? Well, it should run like crazy. Stripey should run like crazy for the protection of the herd and make sure that the lions don't eat him. No, her. Let's make it a female. Let's give even more sympathy, right? So Stripey should hightail it as fast as she humanly, zebra-ly can in order to get the protection of the herd and to dodge the feminist storm of lions coming rolling down the hill. Agreed? Now, what if what happens to Stripey, the little baby zebra, foal, female, if Stripey says, well, come on. I mean, the lions are just hungry. They're just programmed that way. They're just hungry. They're following their instincts. I should have real sympathy with what the lions are going through because it's not their fault. They don't hate me. They're just acting on their instincts. They're just acting things out. They're just following nature's programming. I should not blame them for wanting to eat me. It's not their fault. There's no free will. There's no morality. They're just following their history. They've evolved this way. This is just their programming. What happens? Well, she ends up as a bunch of stripe shreds on the mauling claws and teeth of the lionesses, right? Empathy with the predators is death for the prey. Now, she is in fact empathizing with the predators by running away. Our little friend Stripey, she's empathizing with the predators by running away because she's empathizing with them, but not sympathizing with them. Empathy is when you understand another's emotions. Sympathy is when you agree with the justice and validity of those emotions. Now, she's running away because she gets that the lions want to eat her, but she's just not sympathizing with that and empathizing to the point where she's paralyzed in self-defense. So, if I empathize with my mother to the point where I cannot experience my original emotions, then I am crippled in my defense against exploitation and current and future abuse. The original emotions of horror, I never felt shame because fortunately my mother was just so openly crazy that my mother never had credibility with me, even when I was a kid. I viewed her as dangerous, but not just a right or fair. Even though she'd try and pin these big emotional things on, she was just so out of control. Did she ever apologize to you? No. No, in fact, she came up with all these theories about how the doctors poisoned her, and I should have sympathy with her for all the poisoning she went through, and it wasn't her fault, and the medical professions betrayed her, and for me to have any anger towards her would be to side with the people who were trying to destroy her for mysterious reasons and so on. So no, not only did she never apologize to me, she demanded that I apologize for her for having any criticism for things completely beyond her control. So no, it never happened. But my original experience of fear and anger, right? The fight or flight, right? And fight or flight gets paralyzed for kids because we can't fight and we can't run away. We can't fight, and we can't run away. So we have to suppress our fear and anger response. Now, this will emerge to some degree in our teenage years because we're getting close to getting out. So we'll suit up and fight like crazy, right? I had my screaming matches with my mother in my teens because I could leave. I could leave. So the fight or flight is crippled and has to be suppressed because you also have no allies in society, right? In fact, you only have enablers of abuse in society. It was different for me because some people I talked to, they grew up in these remote farms, but I was always in the middle of paper-thin wall apartments and so on, right? So I was always in a neighborhood and I had extended family when I was in England, a little bit here, but not so much. So you have to get rid of your fight or flight mechanism, right? In order to survive. But the problem is, when you get rid of your fight or flight mechanism, the flight is to get rid of external predators. The fight is to get rid of internal predators. In other words, the flight is to get away from the lions. The fight is to get away from bacteria, cancers, tumors, infections, and so on, right? The internal predators. So the flight is to get away from abusive and exploitive people in your life. The fight is to resist their voices implanted in you that follow you. So you can get away from the people who call you a loser. That's your flight. The fight is to discredit the voices in your head, loser, 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 that follow you, whatever it could be, right? For me, it was, you don't matter, you're unimportant, right? I was fairly able to successfully fight that. So you run from the external predators and you fight the internal echoes of those predators, right? Because in order to protect yourself from external predators, you have to internalize their criticisms, right? Because if somebody says, either I can punch you or you can punch yourself, you'll say, well, I'd rather punch myself. So you'd rather self-attack than be attacked by external people. So you can escape the external attackers, but then you have to deal with the internal attack voices, right? And that's your fight. And that's your flight. Does it make sense so far? Are you with me? Again, I'm not saying do you agree with everything, but does the argument make sense so far? Because there's one last layer here, which is sort of the purpose of this speech. Seems like people get too woo-woo when they abandon the fight-flight too much. I think the reason why is because anger is a response to injustice, and injustice is a moral category. Well, this is the excess of... this is the pathological altruism that is such a cancer to modern society. This is the no flight, no fight. Right? So you know that there's this general difference between the left and the right, that the right has an in-group preference and the left has an out-group preference. So the left has an out-group preference. In other words, they will not get angry except at anyone who interferes with their out-group preference. So that is an over-empathy with externals. And pathological, I would argue. So, in order to become protected, and self-protection is foundational, at least to me, to good mental health. You can't have good mental health if you're continually being pillaged, insulted, abused, neglected, and exploited. You can't be healthy if you're continually under attack and you have to comply with the overwhelming power of abusive forces. Could be parents, could be, you know, whatever, bosses, could be any number of people. But parents is the most common manifestation of this. Not all parents, of course, right? But for the destructive and abusive parents. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is tip-worthy, guys. You know that, right? Freedomain.com/donate. If this doesn't explain your life, you need to find a better show. Not that there is one. In other words, you need to be that better show. So, in order to be protected, you must experience the original fight or flight response with zero empathy for those who've harmed you. Zero empathy. For our good friend Stripey, the baby zebra, to get away from the lions, she has to experience zero empathy for the lions. The moment she empathizes with the lions, her gait falters and she gets eaten. Empathy for healthy people is beautiful. That's your immune system having empathy for your healthy cells and not attacking them. Empathy for destructive, dangerous, and abusive people is your immune system failing to attack viruses, cancers, tumors, bacteria. It'll get you killed. In order to be protected in this life, to have security, you have to re-experience the original anger and you have to absolutely and completely and totally reject the, quote, adult and mature empathy, because that empathy will be used as a hook wherein you will continue to be exploited. So a typical example would be you criticize your mother for abuse or neglect, and she says, well, I guess I was just the worst mother in the whole world and I never did anything right. Boom! Right? That is the activation of pathological empathy for the sake of you then mollifying and coddling her and being in her life and dropping your judgment. That's the tumor, in a sense. This is an analogy. I'm not calling people tumors, but in the analogy, that's the tumor saying to your immune system, look, I just want to grow. I just can't do anything right for you. I guess you just hate everyone, right? Okay. Dangerous things happen. Bad things happen. Now, feeling the original anger at having been hurt, neglected, and abused, or tortured, if it was that bad, right? Feeling that original anger is scary. Because we have to serve corruption in order to survive it. Right? If you're beheaded for not kneeling to the flag, you will kneel to the flag, right? We have to drop our fight or flight response in order to survive, but the only way to be protected as an adult is to reactivate the fight or flight response, which means no empathy. The empathy is part of the pattern that keeps you enslaved to corruptors and abusers, because that's what they activate in order to prevent you from getting the kind of anger which will give you distance and protection from them. Man, I was hoping I would do this topic justice. I must say, I think I have. Helpful, useful, freedomain.com/donate. If you look at your anger as your immune system, you wanted to utterly reject that which is dangerous for you and never attack that which is beneficial to you. It is empathy that made me try and reason. Right. But if you continue to try and reason despite the fact that the other person is not reasoning, then you're continuing to send valuable goods. Like every minute you have is a fantastically valuable good. Every hour you have is a fantastically valuable good. Think of when you wake up an hour early and you're kind of tired. That hour is incredibly... Think of when you're dying and you're in the middle of telling an important story about your life, what you would give for another hour of life. Okay, that can't be right, a $1 thing. Really? That, I'm sure that's a typo. So, think of how valuable an hour is. Everything that is time-based is absolutely valuable. You can make more money.
You can make more love.
You can, to some degree, make more time by being healthier, but you're still mortal. You're still mortal. Every hour you have is very precious. No, no problem. Thank you. It's very, very precious. So people who want to exploit you foundationally want to exploit your time. Through the time is the primary resource through which all other resources flow. If you have no, if you give your parents no time and attention, they can't get your money, they can't get your sympathy, like if they're abusive, relentlessly abusive parents or whatever, right? So time is the portal through which all other resources flow. If you're not in contact with someone, they can't exploit you. So what they want to do is they want to keep you giving them your time so that they can continue their manipulation and they can continue their exploitation. If that makes sense. Which, of course, is why I say to people, you do not have to spend time with relentlessly abusive people. I don't care who they are. And in fact, if they're parents, they have an even higher responsibility than anyone else in your life to not harm you, to protect you. If your parents attacked you, and you know the way it works, right? You know the way it works. I'll give you an exact example of what it is that I'm talking about. This is an exact example of what it is that I'm talking about. If you've had abusive parents, you know the scenario inside and out, backwards and forwards. It's graven into your very bones. So, your mother is screaming at you, maybe hitting you, and then ding dong, there's someone at the door, and she's like, oh, hey, how you doing, blah, 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 and she shoots you a look like, don't you say a fucking thing, and she's all sweetness and sugar, right? My mother would be screaming at me, and then she, some phone would ring, it'd be some, hi, right? Some guy she was interested in, hi, how are you, right? Butter couldn't melt in her mouth, right? So that is a complete flip in the immune system analogy. So that is the immune system completely reversed, anger completely reversed. In other words, where she should be protective of you and skeptical to outsiders, she's abusive to you and incredibly protective of outsiders, right? So this is like an autoimmune disorder where your immune system attacks the healthy cells and that your mother is attacking you and then protects the external intrusive cells, which is the person at the doorbell, right? Or, you know, the old thing that the boss yells at the employee yells at his wife, the wife yells at the kid, right? So if you see your father kowtowing to his boss, oh yeah, I'll get that done this weekend, no problem, sir, absolutely, right? He kowtows to his boss and then snarls at you. That's autoimmune analogy disorder. He's appeasing someone who's unhealthy, toxic, demanding, and exploitive, like his boss wants him to work all weekend. He appeases that, which is your immune system failing to attack pathogens, and he attacks the healthy cells by taking it out on you. And the only way to be safe is to re-experience the original anger with zero, absolutely zero empathy. Because the empathy renders you open to eternally being exploited. Does that make sense? You have to get angry without empathy. Because the moment you have empathy, it is the way that the pathogens grow. The cancer wants empathy from your immune system. You don't want to give that empathy because then the cancer just grows. I swear to God, that is like giving birth to a whale skeleton through my ass. So you have to fight off the empathy for your original anger and fear. Now, obviously, no violence, no abuse, right? I'm just talking about the feelings, the experience, right? But if you re-experience the original anger and absolutely give yourself no empathy, you will be protected going forward in life. And I don't know that there's any other way. I don't know that there's any other way to do it. I don't think there's any. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for 42 years. I'm pretty good at it, and I can't think of another way. And I've never heard of another way. Somebody says, this is why when I walked away from my parents, I got angry but had zero empathy. I didn't understand why. Now I do. Yes. Have sympathy for those who care about you. Have no empathy for those who will harm you. Have empathy for the baby zebra, Stripey, if you're her mother. Have no empathy, or at least no sympathy, for the lions who would eat her ass from here to eternity. Oh, it dizzies me. It dizzies me when this stuff kind of wrestles with and passes through, and I appreciate your care and attention in this topic. It is a very deep and powerful topic, and I like the fact that it comes together with a great analogy that helps it imprint in the mind. So, isn't this when smokers would have a cigarette? Oh, so good. So good. All right. I'll take any other last questions and comments if you have. And if you have comments, of course, you can just post them on the various community sites. You can go to freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. To join the communities, you can go to subscribestar.com/freedomain. You can go to freedomain.locals.com. You've helped me quit smoking. I've been 400 days without. By the way, thanks for your help. You're very welcome. Congratulations. Congratulations. Well done. Magnificent. It's difficult to stop sympathizing with people. It feels like trying to get a clingy house guest to leave. Right. Just imagine being an immune system with a tumor. Right. I mean, would you want an eternal cold because your immune system is like, well, you know, the cold viruses, they're just like us. They just want to reproduce. They just want to find a home. They just want to find a warm place to grow. They care about their children too. I hope the Russians love their children too. Right. So, yeah. You just, hey, endless cold. My endless cold. So, scraps of songs from music long gone. Of course, if you're listening to this later, you're listening to it because people support the show. Chip in at freedomain.com/donate. Deeply, humbly, and gratefully appreciated. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, well, I'm spent like an old copper coin. So have yourselves a beautiful evening. I'll see you Friday night, where we will have a guest singer, I think, for our song quiz. And I really do appreciate everyone's time tonight. Thank you for not having too many questions and letting me do a real journey, because it's been a while since I did a real solo journey, with your feedback, of course, on a live stream. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad I bit the bullet. I was a little nervous to do it, whether I'd be able to get it across well, but I think I did a good job with your help. Thank you so much. Have a glorious, gorgeous evening. Lots of love. Freedomain.com/tonight. Talk to you soon. Bye.